For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Early Duncan had it, they turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin.
Oh, baby! Woo! KD!
You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Oh! Josh Okogie! May the force be with you! Oh, my goodness, Carl Anthony Towns! He is not human! He is catastrophic!
Hello and welcome to the Wolf Among Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Hedke. As always, you can find me on Twitter at @B_HedkeNBA. And the show is a part of the Wolf Among Wolves podcast network on wolfamongwolves.com. Today, I'm joined by Dane Moore, host of the Dane Moore NBA podcast. How's it going, Dane?
It's good, man. Thanks for having me back. It's been 21 games and five wins. Since
I wish it was five losses.
Yeah. That'd be something.
Right. Yeah, well, I just finished teaching preschool all day. So that was an interesting experience because I'm just being a substitute teacher right now because I just got my license. And
is that better or worse than watching Timberwolves games?
You know what? I probably smiled more. Yeah.
There you go.
Right.
There
yeah. Equally youthful is right for sure. It was fun. But upper elementary is probably more my strong suit than the 3 and 4 year olds.
There you go. But anyways, developing the system.
Yeah, I'm developing the system. That's right.
You're on a two-way.
Yep, exactly.
Just waiting to sign that veteran minimum.
I hope I get a veteran minimum next school year. Or maybe I'll get the JMAC treatment and end up there on another two-way contract.
Restricted free agency.
But the first thing I want to talk about, and I didn't originally plan to talk about this, but last night, I started kind of seeing people just tweeting about the whole tanking thing. And it led me to...
Well, that was a mistake on your part.
I know.
What are you doing?
Because I put that tweet out saying like, it's not a smart move to tank or whatever. And I posted like the lottery odds. And it was funny because...
Oh, you signed up for it then.
That was the problem. It was all my fault. But ever since the one day you jokingly said you wanted a GIF or whatever that you could just send to people with odds. So I made that and I sent it to a few people, but I posted it and there's...
Do people know this? Like, what percentage of people understand that if the Wolves have the worst record in the league, they only have a 40% chance of keeping their
pick? Oh, they're okay with it. They think that's like a viable path.
Who's
they'd rather do that? Okay, so just people
let's throw out their Twitter handles. Let's
burn
them.
We'll do it.
I'm kidding. Do not do that.
I'm not going to do it. But somebody did say that they didn't find any value in winning games. And there's more value in betting on a 40% odds to getting the pick, which just in my mind makes absolutely like zero sense. And they knew the lottery odds too. And they still think it's a viable option, which
I would say at some point in the season you go,
yeah,
okay. Like,
but not when Cat's barely played and you don't know how it looks with everything. I would say if you're like still like, maybe like the fifth worst team and there's like 15 games left, then you just try and lose them all just so you have the best odds because you were screwed anyways. But like,
sure. I'm concerned about outside the lottery odds or whatever. I mean, I don't even think this is a tanking related thing. I think you need to be concerned about raising Anthony Edwards in a losing environment. I think that's important.
And that's an underrated aspect that people don't consider.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's fair to say you can't put a price tag on it, but because you probably can. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. There's some danger in that, and I think we obviously that was an element we saw of the Wiggins thing. I think part of the reason why he got held back over his first 6 years in the league was because he grew up in a losing environment. And I think that that cultivates, you know, habits. And I think you could probably to a lesser degree, but also probably true. Like, I think it's cultivated habits for Cat, who's been on losing teams at all but right. 1 year of his career. And then D'Lo, right? Like, he's been on losing teams. And the Nets, were they 42-40 that year?
Yeah, they were barely a winning team in the playoffs that year.
You know, and I, even if it's subconsciously, I think you start setting in, these weird habits where it doesn't, where it stops hurting to lose. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't know, that's just a my opinion thing, but I think that's, I don't know. I think it's something to be considered when you think about the Timberwolves for the rest of this year or just, you know, in general, the next few years.
Yeah, and even there's other aspects of it too, like how long would Cat be happy if they're losing games with the fully healthy roster? Like, that's been a conversation for, and I'm never
at least you have a cop out right now that he hasn't been playing. Yeah, you know, right. so like, and what can Cat say?
But yeah, but like, there's people that like guarantee if the Timberwolves tank, like Cat's gonna leave. I can't go that far because I can't read Cat's mind. I can't speak for him, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's what happened. If he was just like fed up, and he's been through so much personally and everything, that if he wanted to just like remove himself from this environment that he spent so long in, like, I think that's justifiable even now just because of all the stuff he's gone through. But if it's like a purely basketball decision based on this season, I don't think it's going to come down to that until they're like losing games with him in the lineup and he's doing everything he can elevated on both sides of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's the great question, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and it's the case. This is a age-old story. Like, this happens with most really good 25-year-olds.
Right.
You start asking, you know, questions you don't know the answers to, which are, you know, how much does he want the player X want to be there? You know, Paul George, Kevin Durant, whatever. You know, you go to Blake Griffin down the list, like, guys just typically move, and they move for a lot of different reasons. And sometimes they stay, and that's the challenge, right? That's the Gerson Rosas challenge, is to cultivate an environment that makes them want to stay. And ironically, or not ironically, the tricky part is the fact that sometimes cultivating that environment is about losing a lot,
right,
to get a good, you know, another good player. Like, that's the case for last year. It's like, all right, maybe you lose a little bit of goodwill with Cat in the notion that, you know, you had another losing season, but your reward for that was Anthony Edwards, who theoretically would make Cat want to stay more. And it's the same equation this year too, except you just multiply times 0.4,
right? Exactly,
for these guys. So I don't know. I mean, we don't know the rest of the equation. All we know is the 0.4.
Exactly. So that's just, I just wanted to touch on that because I still don't see it as a viable path this early in the season. And it just confuses me how so many people do. Like, I was surprised to see when people found out that it was 40% odds that we keep it and 60 that we lose it, that they were still like gunning for that option over other ones. Cause I don't think
a lot of people are very good at math.
Yeah. Maybe they need to go back to preschool. I could teach them a few things. no, but so that's just kind of the whole situation there. I don't see it as a viable path right now. And
it's 21 games into the year.
Yeah. Right. And this is the youngest team in the league. And,
Whatever. That makes it bad. I get that part of making it bad, but teams don't start tanking 21 games in the season.
Oh yeah.
Ever. No. Even teams that tank,
even the Thunder, know? If the Thunder are going to probably end up tanking at the end of the year, but they're not doing it right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, you do that by making moves. And then at the end of the season, you do it by shutting down players.
They're using this time.
That's what the Wolves did.
They're letting Shea like show out, be who he is. Get the most from Dort, who obviously is your guy, and you had some devastating news about Dort today that the Wolves liked him pre-draft. Did he go undrafted?
Yeah, he went undrafted. It's unfair to say that Dort is my guy because he became – now he seems to be everybody's guy. But
right.
I remember – and Kyle Tagge, who works over at Canis, I remember we were talking about Dort. Like I think Kyle came and covered a Wolves Thunder game, and this is like way back at the beginning. Well, this is before Dort. This is my case for why Dort's my guy. Is I told Kyle at that game, I was like, I like this little Dort guy who's you know, a 6 foot tall fire hydrant. And that was before Dort made it. The Thunder were my team last year. They were my non-Wolves team that I just was like, okay, league pass. Like I'm watching the Thunder game. But I also, Dort is nowhere near as good as I pretend he is.
He's not like some second star on the playoff team or anything. But like, is he who the Wolves wish Josh Okogie was?
It probably is already who Josh Okogie is. Like,
but Dort,
they just use him different. He's shooting better. Yeah, this year. I mean,
Josh is shooting worse this year. So
I know, but last year Dort was just as bad as Josh.
So. No, yeah. This year he's
Dort has developed 30, more than
37% from three this year for Dort, but it was like 46 like earlier, and it's kind slowly coming down, which you see with people all the time. But but anyways, so what I did want to talk about mostly was just like the rotation, because it so many questions coming, because we've seen what the rotation's been pretty consistent lately with people that are healthy, but like Culver's been out, Juancho's been out, and obviously that was somebody who got paid in the offseason before the year. And that cat guy's been out too, but we know he's going to be in the rotation. But behind him, there's some questions. But before the year, I wrote for Wolf Among Wolves, like a rotation guessing thing. And I had, I think, 7 locks for the rotation. It was Cat, D'Lo, Beasley, Edwards, Rubio, Okogie. And then I locked Juancho in because he got paid. And I was like, you know, this is the move. And then I had 4 guys who I said should probably be in, and that was Lehman, Culver, Nas, and Ed Davis. And I actually projected Ed Davis to have more minutes than Nas, which is weird for me because I was a really big Nas supporter even last season. And people thought Ed Davis was going to be in the rotation, whether that was at the 4 or at the 5 or whatever. And then I had 2 prove it guys, which was Vanderbilt and McDaniels. And this was written before J-Mac was resigned, so I didn't know if he was going to be back or anything like that, so I didn't want to write about him.
He's like half back.
Yeah, right. But so I feel confident that still probably 6 of those 7 I said were locks are still going to be in it, and then it's Juancho that is like the question mark. So the thing that I want to talk about first was Jace Frederick tweeted out something that Ryan said the other day, saying that once the Wolves are healthy, Ryan's going to find a rotation and just like stick to it for a while, just to kind of see what it can be. Cause as a coach, you're not just going to, okay, Juancho has 1 bad game. If he's in the rotation, now he's out of the rotation next game, whoever. And so you want to have some consistency. How many do you think are going to be in that set rotation that he runs?
10.
And that's my guess too. I would think it would be 10. So
it's been 10 all year. It's been 10 all year.
And it was 10 most of last year too. Occasional games, it was 9, occasional 11 if there's foul trouble and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So do you think he ultimately wants to cut it down later on? Like there's been the talk about, he said, he would like to get it to like 8 or 9 guys, but like.
Yeah. I mean, I've asked him about this numerous times this year. What he says every time is that if it were clear that there were like 8 or 9guys who were playing really well, that he would, you know, and then the other ones weren't, that he wouldn't. But what Ryan always says is that there hasn't been that big of a difference in the production of whatever player 7 through player 11, which is true, right? Mm-hmm. And it's for that reason, you know, that you have gotten to see generally speaking, I think 10 is probably too many, but I think at the same time, like it has allowed for opportunities, you know, you could go back to last year with Nas and then this year first with Vanderbilt and then McDaniels. I mean, those are all 3 of those guys who were not in the rotation, didn't seem like rotation players. And then they, you know, they get a shot and now you're like, well, given the alternatives, they should for sure, you know, they should be for sure in the mix. And, So I don't know. I mean, it has opened up some opportunity.
Yeah. So if we want to just run down like 10 guys, who do you think those 10 guys are? Cause I feel like we will have probably 9 of the same 10, but I'm just curious, like who your 10th person would be, who do you think Ryan's gonna, not necessarily what you would do.
Do the starters first. You do the starters first of who you think Ryan is going to start once the team is, if everyone was magically healthy today.
So I think that's going to be D'Lo, Beasley. I don't think he can put Edwards back on the bench. So I think it's going to be Edwards. And I think McDaniels has worked his way into the starting lineup. And then obviously Cat at the 5.
Is that what you would do? Or is that what you think Ryan will do?
I think it's both.
You're right.
And you probably have a little more like you hear Ryan talk about stuff. And I try to listen to whatever they post on YouTube and watch all that stuff. But like, sometimes all I can get is what's like written down in words, and you just reading that versus like hearing it is two totally different things. Kind of like the Wiggins comments in like Golden State, like
yeah, right.
Hearing him say it versus like reading what he said, there's like a different cadence and everything to how he said it. But those seem like the 5 that should.
Yeah, and I don't know if it'll be McDaniels like right away. I mean, I guess people are probably listening to this after the Oklahoma City game, the first Oklahoma City game. And I think there's a chance that McDaniel starts tonight at the 4, kind of triggering this. Not just because Shea's out, just like I think in general they're going to move to that soon, of McDaniel's as the starting 4.
That's crazy. But, that's just so crazy. Even me, who's like the most optimistic person of all, like all these young players, like I never would have guessed McDaniel's like saw more than 10 games total with the Wolves this year, like.
Yeah.
And much less played good.
But that the reason you didn't see that is because you're too optimistic and you didn't bake in.
Yeah.
The fact
maybe I was too optimistic for both the people that above him, like Wancho and those guys, and that there wouldn't be injuries, and
or just that this team is poison.
Or the fact that I weigh almost the same, or the fact that I almost weigh more than McDaniels does, and he's 9 inches taller than me too. Like that. That's
power
part
forward.
Of it.
You're a power.
He's not power anything. He's just forward.
Yes. But no, I don't know. I don't know if that comes, you know, until Cat gets back. But I think, yeah, I do think soon that they move into a Cat, McDaniels, Ant, Beasley, D'Lo, you know, starting lineup. And then the question is about the other 5, right?
Right. So you like McDaniels next to Cat more than not that we've seen like either of them, but like theoretically you like McDaniels next to Cat more than Vanderbilt next to Cat, or is it that you like Vanderbilt more next to Nas than you like McDaniels next to Nas?
Probably both, but I think McDaniels is probably just better.
Yeah.
I think you just want to put the better player next to Cat.
Fits the scheme offensively more too, which is,
I mean, you can make the other argument though too, which is that, you know, Cat could maybe use some more force. Security on the interior. Yeah. Which Vanderbilt would provide over McDaniels. But I mean, I think one of the biggest surprises to me has been how well, you know, McDaniels does defend in, you know, the interior just with length. And spring and shot blocking ability. I mean, he's proven to be a good shot deterrent, and so is Vanderbilt too. But yeah, I think I like the idea of Nas and Vanderbilt as, you know, the backup bigs.
Cause Nas could use some help rebounding the ball too. I think that's like a clear thing. Like Nas is a fine rebounder, but he's not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he's not going to average 10 a game as a starter playing 30 something minutes, probably. Vanderbilt will probably out rebound him in less minutes.
Right. Exactly.
He had what, like 11 the other night and like,
yeah,
like not very like 14 minutes or whatever he played.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the residual impact, if your 4 bigs are Cat, McDaniels, Oz, and Vanderbilt, is that Ed Davis is then out of the rotation. So he's,
yeah. And I know Britt wants like Davis to get some run in there, but that would, if he's playing 10 minutes and Cat, if you want Ed played in 10 minutes and you want Cat playing 32 minutes, then you gotta get
no, Nas. I see value at two, but at the same time, now you're doing the really watering it down sort of thing. And in my opinion, you want to give like you want to give as many minutes as you can, you know, to the guys that are in the rotation.
Yeah.
I think particularly with young players, if they're playing, you know, just 2 6-minute shifts and they're getting 12 minutes, 10 minutes a night,
yeah,
it's just going to be hard, you know, hard to get much out of them. And if you're kind of signing up for that, if you put Davis in for 12 minutes.
Yeah.
But there is things
that are good about it. Like his screening would be like a huge asset in like some facets, but I just think like throwing Nas and all that stuff like is worth more than the screens Davis sets for Russell and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's debatable. But again, if we're having the what's going to happen versus what we would want to happen thing, is I think what's going to happen is Davis is out of the rotation. I mean, Davis isn't in the rotation right now.
Yeah.
So,
He didn't even play last game, which I didn't really realize until after the game. And I was like, oh, Vanderbilt was exclusively like the backup five to Nas.
Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know. I mean, that might be situational. I could see them if they're playing like a big team that has, you know, starts a big four and a five and plays them a lot. Like maybe like that's a game where something. You get Davis. Yeah, sure. Yeah. There's a good handful of teams there, but yeah, generally speaking, I think Davis is out. And then the next kind of part of the puzzle is, all right, well, our reasoning for taking Davis out was that you already have a full house amongst the bigs. So what do you do with Wancho? Like,
yeah.
Is he, you know, is he in the mix there too? And, you know, again, if we're having the what do we think they're going to do conversation, I think there's a possibility that Wancho's in and Vanderbilt's out of, you know, of that group. And because if not, if you're going with four bigs and you have Vanderbilt in, then I mean, Wancho can't play the three.
He's not quick enough.
He's got issues at the four too, but yeah, like
he's just not really, he doesn't have a position in like a bad way. You know, some people don't have a position in like a kind of okay way. He doesn't have one, and it's not like a good way. He's too small to play the four and too slow to play the three, and yeah
doesn't sound very good.
I think he's gonna get a chance to earn his spot back.
I think it'll depend on what happens here kind of over the next few weeks, because if McDaniels does take kind of a starting spot and run with it, if that happens, like Wancho, it's going to be a while till he's back, like in the rotation, you know, I think period. So we're not a while, but for sure a few games. So you're going to kind of have this window right here to make your decision, you know, what you're going to do at the power forward position there, or to inform your decision. But if, you know, if McDaniels or Vanderbilt don't stick out as much as you hope, then you have the case. Then Ryan has the case for bringing Wancho back in, or Kirsten has the case for pressuring that, you know, maybe to happen. Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's like,
so I would say that's kind of like the 10th. That's a spot that's in question, is the backup power forward Vanderbilt versus Wancho.
Yeah. The other thing I want to say about Wancho is like, Wancho's probably overpaid for like what his worth probably has been, for sure. But like, I think people kind of make out his contract to be a lot worse than it really is. Like, he's still only making like $6 million over this year and then like $7 million next year. Like, it's not like it's really making the Timberwolves like screwed, but like when you are close to the tax, it matters more. But it's not like an immovable contract that you will have to like pay a first round pick to get off of or something like that. That's why I don't think it's like a huge deal.
Yeah, there's kind of like the narrative of like, oh, they paid Wancho, so he has to play. But it is important to acknowledge what they paid him.
Yeah,
not just that they paid him. Like to some extent, it's like, okay, sure, that was your other signing of the offseason. And so that would indicate that it's somebody you're somewhat invested in, but drafting a player in the first round, like Jaden McDaniels, would indicate you're invested, you know, in him. Like just cause he's on a rookie scale deal that pays him $2 million doesn't mean they like him less than they like Wancho, you know? So it's, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a little overrated how invested they are in Wancho, but at the same time, the behavior is dictated when Wancha was healthy.
Yeah.
That they were willing to kind of see it out a little bit more than whatever his production suggested.
Yeah. And he didn't get paid as a starter either. Like,
yeah, that's backup like, money.
Yeah, that's backup money. So, and I don't think it was ever the long-term plan to be a starter. Maybe it was a starter plan this season, but I don't think it was like, this is the perfect player we're going to pair with Cat for the next 4 years.
Exactly.
I just never really saw that.
So what do you think they'll do at the wing?
Okay, so this is where it gets interesting. So if you throw out, so obviously Naz is the backup center, so he's going to be in whatever. So if you put Vanderbilt in over Wancho on the bench, you cannot justify running Rubio, Okogie, Culver, Vanderbilt, and Naz. That's one shooter in that entire lineup. One, like,
that's good why, shooter. That's and then, why I think it might be Wancho.
Yeah, and that's the point, too. Or is it Noel over Culver? Which, like, I've been a proponent of Culver, and I know you, like, you've been really low on him, and then he tricked you for, like, a little bit, and now you're back to being low on him, which is totally warranted because, like, he hasn't really shown much outside of a handful of games this year. So, like, is Noel an option over Culver, or are, you know, because I don't – how do you run for non-shooters? I don't.
You probably don't. I mean, you could stagger up the rotations more and not make it a platoon. That would be,
you know, that's true. You don't, the Saunders never really does five out, five in, like right at a time. They'll share the floor, but not
did,
like,
he did it at San Antonio the last game.
Yeah.
There's some five guys out there. I mean, yeah, no, that's the question. Is, you know, just cause those are the 6th through 10th best players. Do they, you know, do they fit together as a group of five? And no, like they don't because you lack shooting there. At the same time, it's hard to see. It's hard to see them not play Culver. I think, you know, one, the first round pick investment in him a year ago. And then two, he's your best defensive option of all the leftover guys other than Josh.
Right.
And so you kind of, like, I think they could have really used Culver in that Spurs game to put on DeRozan. I think
just that length and been, yeah.
I mean, or just because everyone else sucked guarding him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Culver isn't a bad defender. No. What complicates it is who can you play him with offensively? And, you know, I think there's a way, like, the best way to play multiple non-shooters is to do so with Cat and D'Lo on the floor. So I would wonder if the rotation is staggered in a way so that the minutes that Culver and Okogie share the floor together are when Cat is also on the floor outside of the starter minutes. I know it's getting kind of complicated, but like there isn't the problem with playing Josh and Jarrett Culver together is only exacerbated when Cat isn't on the floor with them as well. Like the offense can be fine. If the lack of shooting can be taken care of if Cat's on the floor with them too. So I don't know. I mean, Ryan's tried different things over the years with Cat, like playing him all the way through the whole first quarter, like the 12 minutes right there, or he's done things too, where he's been the first sub out and he comes back in with the second unit. So I would assume it's probably something like that when Cat's back, and that opens up a little bit more optionality for, you know, for what you're doing off the bench, allowing you to play Okogie and Culver, who I think are the guys that they would prefer to play over Jalen Noel and over Jake Layman, who are your other wing options there.
Yeah. Do you think Noel's defense is like actually like pretty good?
I don't think we know yet. That's
kind of where I'm at too.
Yeah.
That's like where I'm at too.
If you knew he was just like a shade worse defensively than Culver, then you play him.
Yeah. He's obviously like the choice there. And he's looked, he gives good effort on the defense side of the ball.
Yeah, he tries. That's a win.
That's a win for sure.
But he's also like 6'4". He's pretty undersized from a defensive standpoint. Like in a not a Kogi way. Like, he's just actually like a two guard.
Yeah, and the Wolves already have like a Malik Beasley who's like
that. Yeah, he's size. Like Malik.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably what, you know, Noel ends up being defensively, is kind of like Malik, which is, you know, somebody's giving you a lot of effort there, but maybe loses in some situations or can only guard specific people based on his size. I think that's kind of part of Malik's issue. And then the other part is just, you know, off ball awareness. Yeah, right. And Noel, I think, has been good at that part of it, which like kind of lends me to believe that he'd be a better defender, but I don't think we know if he's, I don't think we know if he's a good defender right now. I don't think we have a lot of like film evidence of anything outside of effort.
But we don't know a lot.
Probably going to happen is somebody else is going to get hurt.
Yeah, like that's like it's
we're,
inevitable.
We're having this conversation that it's 13 guys, whatever.
Yeah,
that are all good. I mean, with injuries or with COVID and everything, it's like it probably will be a little bit of mix and match. But I think the broader point is that if they are fully healthy, this gets weird on the second unit with either from a shooting perspective or just from, you know, needing to pull one of Wancho or Culver out of the rotation, who are two of the people who Rosas has bet on the biggest in his regime. And that leads to a whole weird, like, what impact does Rosas have on the rotations sort of conundrum.
I don't know, because Noel's another guy who played at Washington, like Jaden McDaniels, and I'm pretty sure they still ran zone defense when he was there.
I asked them about that last night or two nights ago.
Did they run zone defense when he was at Washington?
Yeah. Washington always runs zone, and I asked him
for which him is just for... they're just bad at it too, which I don't know why they play it, because they're not good at it. Like, if you were good at it, one thing, but they just haven't looked good at it.
They've been good at it before, I think. I mean, whatever. At bottom of the line, Jalen played 2 years of zone defense in college and now comes to the pros and doesn't play last year and now is just getting his first time. So he hasn't really played competitive basketball in a man concept for a long time. And I asked him about it, and what his response was funny. I don't know if I agree with it, but he was like, well, I played 2 years of zone at Washington, but in high school I played 4 years of man. So his assertion was because he played man in high school that he could do it, which
I played man in high school too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking also. I mean, we don't know that he can't do it, but know that it's been a while.
For sure. But then obviously keep going, like Ricky is gonna be in the rotation. But he's gonna be
he'll be the backup point guard.
And then Okogie's gonna be in there, I'm guessing, unless like he just gets tragically bad defensively.
I think he's in there because they will want him in for sure for his defense. And also, like, we're guessing on the, you know, the starting lineup that he's going to get removed. I mean, pretty much every indication up to this point is that Josh is a starter. He started like every game except for the one, I think, when he was coming back, his first game back from injury, maybe first two when he's coming back from injury. But like, they like Josh too. And Josh is important to their scheme, particularly when Scott's back and just kind of, you know, controlling the point of attack and working, you know, working with Cat there. He's the best on the team at that type of game, and getting back to, you know, have that rear view contest on the shot of the pick and roll ball handler. And that's really important for putting Cat in a profitable situation defensively. There aren't a lot of other guys on this team who can do that. I mean, Culver is your next best option. That's not something Ant can do. That's not something Malik can do. Jaden is who they've used too. Like, if Culver and Okogie are out of the game, they're going to put McDaniels on the team's best wing creator, which is this whole just weird thing, because it's like, they have whoever their power forward is guards Ja Morant or Luka Doncic or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Yeah, like it's a whole funky thing, but it actually kind of works. I think, like, I think it's been fine to do that the past few games, where you put Josh on Colin Sexton, and then you can just put Ant to slide up to the four, and he's guarding Larry Nance or Torian Prince, whoever's in at the four for them. Like, it does work defensively that way.
Yeah, and the whole thing comes back to, like, how you define positions on a basketball court. Is it, like, where you play on offense or where you play on defense? Because Ryan said before the year.
Offense. On this team,
didn't Ryan say before this year that it was who you were guarding is who you
were? Yeah, but they don't like to talk about positions. The distinguishing characteristics for this team are where you are positioned on offense. For most teams, yeah, I think it is defined by who you're guarding. But with Josh, he's always going to be guarding the point of attack. So if we're using that definition, then he's the point guard.
Yep.
Josh isn't the point guard, right? I think you distinguish
for the Nigerian basketball team, he is.
Maybe. That's a good team.
He was. And he claimed that it helped his ball handling, but I haven't seen it, so.
I mean, I just think, like, the four spot's interesting of how they use it offensively, because, you know, whether that be, like, Vanderbilt in the dunker spot or, you know, Josh mashing out to the corner, whatever that might be, like, that's how you define positions on this team, is by who is playing the four offensively, more so than defensively.
Defensively, they're just kind of looking for the most advantageous matchup or the whoever D'Lo can be hit on, and then you just adjust accordingly that way.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of protocol, like, in place there of you this, right, if that, and this if that, and it's but a lot of that is freed up by Josh being able to put Josh on anyone, you know, one through four. So
speaking of D'Angelo Russell's defense, what have you thought of it so far, like, this year compared to what you've known of it prior to him being on the Timberwolves?
Still atrocious off ball, a lot better on ball is what
that's
I would
what
say.
That's what I've come to kind of conclude. Have you looked at the synergy numbers of his defense?
Well, doesn't everybody's synergy's numbers suck on the team? They're the worst defense in the league.
Okay, but spot up situations, he is 24th percentile, just bad, like 1.2 points per possession.
That's better than I would have thought it would have been.
You want to take a guess what his percentile is pick and roll ball handler defense?
Fifth.
94th percentile.
As a pick and roll ball handler. Oh, and he's guarding. Okay, got it.
Yes, so he's 0.593 points per possession, and that's defending his most. And that's his most used defensive thing, according to Synergy. And obviously, Synergy's not, like, the end-all be-all for, like, how good a player is.
No, that's a good indicator.
So he's given up.
I had to check. You know whose is the worst?
It's Jaden. Jaden's is bad.
Well, Jaden hasn't played very much. Yeah. Ant, it's, like, he's, like, overall, like, third percentile or whatever the last time I looked at it was. I think what just hurts you, like, I think D'Lo is actually okay on ball in those situations because the people he's guarding aren't the best pick and roll option, right, on the team typically. And, so for him, it's just kind of like staying in front. And
plus, he's got those long arms and he's not, like, a small point guard. Like, he's got decent size. So I think that helps him. But yeah, he's given up 32 points in 54 possessions. So, like, that's pretty not impressive. I did not expect seeing that. When I logged in, but
I think where he's killer is when there's when somebody gets penetration on their man and he's the weak side help. I mean, there was one big play at the end of the Spurs game was Trey Lyles, you know, went to the basket and D'Lo's got to step in there and take a charge or be at the charge circle to contest, and he's bad at those physical elements of it where he just doesn't really, you know, take that contact well or take it at all. And I think that's what this team really misses in general, is because that's kind of like a form of rim defense.
Yeah.
If your big isn't there, you've got to show bodies, like, at the rim. And that's what I'm saying. When I mark down in my notes when D'Lo has had a bad defensive play, it's typically in those type of situations. And when he's had a good defensive play or solid, it is more at the point of attack and in, you know, ball screen actions.
Yeah. And he uses his hands well too, in, like, you know, situations, poke a ball free and stuff like that. So I don't think he's, like, as bad at defense as, like, Trae Young is, who, like, is notoriously, like, the worst defender in the league.
I wouldn't say he's a lot better.
No. But I just think Trey just doesn't even have the size to like guard, like, you know, isolation, but like, you know, on ball defense situations. Right.
D'Lo's got some size. That helps. Right. That helps a little bit.
Okay. So we already talked about, like, we think Edwards is probably going to soon be like the starting three on this team.
I think he already is. He's the starter going forward.
He has shown some pretty good like synergy, it seems like, with like D'Lo and Beasley offensively, which is not necessarily not something I really expected to happen like right out the gate. But it's looked pretty solid. So that's like been something that I know it's
against the rules to give Saunders a compliment, but the way they've made that work with the two guard front, I think has been a big part of why that's been, been more successful. It's kind of getting away from more just the one guard high pick and roll and kind of having the optionality of D'Lo and Ant or Ricky and Ant up there. That I think that engages Ant more. And they didn't do it in the San Antonio game where they just were basically running one man actions the whole time. And that fourth quarter went terribly, I think, in part because of that. But you do kind of need to adjust your whole scheme if you're going to have a very ball-dominant player out there in D'Lo, a very ball-dominant player in Ant, and then also a third player that you really want to involve off-ball in the league. And that's even before you bring Kat into the equation. Like, all three of those guys are going to – it's going to be kind of weird. It's going to be kind of weird for all of them to take more of a back seat here in the coming games. Offensively, just the workload's going to be less.
Yeah. And Kat's going to get his 20 whatever point. Like, that's just who he is. But, like, even this, like, so far we've seen, like, Kat's fine with deferring to, like, other guys and, you know, finding passes to other guys. But, like, he's still going to dominate possessions.
It's just so much more usage than Ed Davis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you got –
and even more uses than Nas. Like, he's going to be passing out of, like – the high post or like the elbow a lot more than Nas Reed, right, and definitely a lot more than Ed Davis is. Mm-hmm. But it should also open up the offense. You know, it's not going to, it should hinder the offense. It should, you know,
no,
theoretically
I just think it will help. I just think there's going to be like that game, you know, where Malik, and this is understandably so, I think we saw frustration from him in the fourth quarter of not getting enough touches. Right.
Yep.
And as he should, he was having his best game of the year and he wasn't getting a lot of touches. But I think a lot of times the games are going to start feeling like that for him, where there's just the natural flow of the game sometimes is he's now going to have only be shooting 8 shots in a game. Not that that's his average, but you know, I'm interested to see how he responds to that, because if you look at now, so what's it been? He's played 35 games for the Wolves, 14 last year, 21 this year.
Yep.
Like, he's been the number one or number two option in I would even say like the Cat games, because like you said, Cat was deferring. He's been so heavily prioritized in the offense that it's just, you know, it's going to be an adjustment. And the Wolves, I mean, Saunders is going to need to adjust too and be intentional about keeping him involved. And I've been thinking about that a lot recently of just, you know, are there ways that they can get Malik more involved now when he's having these games where he's like 8 of 9 from 2 and 3 of 5 from 3, you go, man, can we make it so it's more than 14 shots? Like,
yeah,
that's what, you know, that's what I don't know. It's hard. It's going to be tricky. It's going to be tricky on the players and the coaching, because these are four ball dominant offensive players.
And I think one way to kind of do that is you're not going to want Malik to ever be like your sixth man, like coming off the bench, but like, is he possibly ever? Well, maybe at some point, but I'm saying right this year with this team.
Yeah. Right.
Is he like the first guy subbed out so he can come back with the second unit later and, you know, get some run where he is maybe not the third option or whatever. He's like the first or second option on the floor, just so you don't have your four guys that could get you 20, like on the court at the same time.
Yeah. I think there's adjustments to be made there, and it doesn't necessarily have to be him subbed out first. It could be getting Kat and D'Lo out, you know, they're both out for the last 5 minutes of the first, and maybe Malik plays all 12 of the first. And then for those last 5 minutes of the quarter, it's his show or whatever, you know, it's more going through him. There's a lot of ways to adjust for that. It's just, when you have a team that's really heavy on offense, that's part of the challenge. Like, yeah. is to make that work. And then the most important time is the time when they're all on the floor together. Because we could say, like, oh, you need to stagger them to spread the ball around and this and that. Well, the last 8 minutes of every game, you're going to want all four of those guys out on the floor. So how are you going to make that work? Like, that's going to be 15 minutes a game of 20 minutes a game of those guys out there. That's half the game, you know, like how do you make that work? Keeping everyone, the offense is going to be good, but how do you keep everyone happy in the midst of that that's the balance.
Yeah. And theoretically, you know, it's a good problem to have too much offense, but you know, if D'Lo's not, you know, passing the ball to like people that are hot at the end of the games, like we saw in the San Antonio game, you know, not getting Malik involved, which it's tough, but like Ant had one possession. Malik had what?
Yeah. I think if you go through that, like it was way too much high pick and roll for D'Lo, right?
Yeah.
In the fourth quarter. We can all agree on that. Yep. But we oftentimes define a possession by how it ends, not by the actions you try and get to before it. And if you go back, and I didn't realize this like in live time, I only did once I went back, was that they were trying to get to pin down actions for Malik in the fourth quarter there. But what would happen, they run that double drag thing with Malik and D'Lo up there, and Nas is up there too. And they're trying to use Nas to free Malik so that Malik can get the catch and then he can isolate or catch it on a curl, whatever. They were trying to do those things. They did that a lot of possessions. But what happened was Nas didn't set a good screen on Malik's man. Malik didn't come off screen well. And so now if you're D'Lo, Malik is not open. He has not freed himself to be open. Nas and him have not done their part of the execution to get open. So now you're D'Lo and there's 8 seconds left on the shot clock. What do you do?
Right.
You call Nas for the screen and then it's a pick and roll. That's what I'm talking about. The end of the possession, it ended that way. And we define the possession as a high pick and roll for D'Lo. But, you know, part of it is they need to execute, including D'Lo. D'Lo is part of that equation too. If you're trying to run pin down action for Malik, then you got to run pin down action for Malik. And that includes Nas, Malik, and D'Lo all making that happen. And they didn't. They didn't do that.
Yeah. And I think that was the thing too, is like some of like the after timeout plays, I think they just like didn't work out. And, you know, people are like, oh, that's what Ryan drew up. And it's like, okay, watch what Ryan actually drew up and then watch how the Spurs stopped it. And then we kind of had to resort to D'Lo doing whatever he does.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it was a failure on all parts. I mean,
Sure.
In the fourth, and that includes Ryan. And Ryan said after the game that he took fault in not getting Ant enough touches there. And I think that was just
Ant had what, that one touch after he rebounded it and brought the ball
up? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that was an error, you know, on Ryan's part. And in my opinion, I think at some point you just go, all right, we've run like the last 8 possessions have ended in a D'Lo pick and roll. So at what point do you just say, all right, Ant, come up and get it, just run 4 flat and isolate. And, you know, and just try and beat your man one-on-one. I think that was the error of Saunders was not. And I think Ryan would say that he did say that essentially after the game too, is in hindsight, what you were trying to run wasn't working. It's not that you weren't running anything. I think people think, oh, they weren't running anything. Yeah. They were running stuff. What they were running was not being executed. And so because of that, it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And so to me, what that suggests is you got to run something different, run something that is very easy to execute. And it's just the easiest possible thing to execute is running an isolation play for your best isolation player. And if they ever got to that, it was with D'Lo and it wasn't with Ant. He wasn't.
Yeah. And D'Lo only capitalized like what, twice? He had like 2 layups there.
Yeah. He got fouled one time. It was good when he actually got to the basket.
Yeah, he finished
pretty
well.
It was a disaster if he pulled up. It was just trying to do his foul thing, and it was bad.
Yeah. And you think just a couple more baskets was, like, all the Wolves needed to, like, win that game. You know, a couple – what I think they went, like, 6 minutes without scoring or something like that.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah. So, I don't know. There's obviously – everybody's going to want to blame it on Saunders because that he is, like, the scapegoat, and he hasn't been great. Like, I'm not going to defend that he's been good.
There's blame. Great. There's blame.
But there's blame everywhere.
Yeah. You got a team that's executing really poorly, particularly in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And so I would say that that is on both the players and the coaches. If your team isn't executing, that's on your coaches, but the players got to do it. You, this isn't a video game. You can't joystick them off the screen and hit A to pass or whatever. Like it doesn't work there. And I think part of that is a failure of coaching it in practice, you know, and getting those reps in there. Now, the other part of that is they haven't been able to practice. They haven't been able to practice much at all this entire year.
Every other night.
Yeah, they practiced yesterday. So let's hope to see some execution here in the Oklahoma City game. But I don't know. I don't know. Anybody who's coached basketball and you've coached it at multiple different levels, your players execute better the older they are.
Yeah.
And the Wolves
I coached fourth grade. They didn't execute.
The Wolves have the equivalent of that rather than, you know, ninth graders.
And I'm not sure if you saw this, but I just went and like counted how many games every team has played with all their players. So like added up every game played for every player in the league right now. So the Wolves total or average per player, third lowest. The average player on the Wolves has played 189 games in their career. The Grizzlies and Hornets are only the teams that have less. And then like you go to the Lakers, they played 450 average. So like, and then I went through and looked at how many games every single player has played. Edwards, Reed, Vanderbilt, Culver, McDaniels, McLaughlin, Noel, and Higgins, but we don't count him. So that's seven guys that have played less than one full NBA season on this Timberwolves roster. That's like a really inexperienced team when you think of like five of those guys are like in the rotation.
And now to spray more blame around, that's not on them either. You know, that's on who put that roster together.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I don't know. I mean, people can assign the blame as they want. Some goes on Ryan, some goes on the players, and some goes on Gerson. You know, at the end of the day, he's the maestro of all of it. He chose the coach, he chose the players, he chose the style of play. I mean, how can you be surprised? How can you be surprised that this has transpired when Cat's been injured? Like, obviously you couldn't plan for Cat being injured, but you didn't have they had no parachute for a Cat injury.
Right.
And like, I think part of them in like the hyper-logical sense, which is the one that they operate under, is, well, if Cat's out, it doesn't matter anyways. And I can get behind some of that, right? Like, yeah, you're not going anywhere. If you don't have Cat on this team, you're going to be a bad team. But that's where I go back to, like, there's a human element of this. There's what is the impact then of playing in a losing environment? What's the impact of playing without the parachute? Like, you fall down and you die.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened here is they didn't. This doesn't work without Cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people are, you know, I'm actually not saying that as an excuse. I'm saying that as an indictment. People think it's always an excuse when you say, oh, they don't have Cat. They don't have Cat. Why can it only work if Cat's out
with Cat? Yeah.
That's the indictment.
Speaking of that, like, so D'Lo right now is trying to be, you know, the number one option or 1A with Beasley as 1B or whatever.
Do you think he wants to be that?
No, I don't think he does. I really don't think D'Lo wants to. I think he would want to be 2 behind Cat. But has D'Lo ever?
I think D'Lo hates this. D'Lo hates this.
No, yeah, I agree. But has he ever really not been the best player on his team outside of like his rookie year?
Well, probably both years in LA, he wasn't the best player, right?
Okay, yeah, sorry. Two years in LA. But Brooklyn, was he him, LeVert,
first
Dinwiddie?
Year, first year in Brooklyn probably would have been, I forget that roster. Dinwiddie, maybe? No, I don't know if Dinwiddie's good there. Yeah, that first year they didn't have much. They were like, it was like LeVert's first year. It was Dinwiddie.
We'll pull it up quick. Yeah, it's like it those guys that
Hollis Jefferson played a lot on that team. Ed Davis was in that rotation.
Yeah.
Jared Allen. I guess it was honestly kind of like a team like this where it was, yeah, maybe D'Lo's the best player and then a lot of role players, and those role players were all better than these Wolves role players.
Right. And D'Lo led that team in scoring outside of Jeremy Lin playing in one game and scoring 18 points.
Oh, okay.
D'Lo averaged 15 a year. That was the first year, 15 a game, 15 and a half. And then Rondé was second with 14. So like he was the guy. That was a, I don't think they were good.
They had 14. That's insane.
And they still had 28 wins.
That's good coaching. The
Wolves wouldn't have 28 wins if D'Lo was averaging 15 points. And Rondé was averaging.
But what if Rondé was on the team right now? Yeah, averaging 14. Right.
But then the second year, he led the team in scoring, and then it was him, Joe Harris.
Joe Harris came the second year.
Yeah, and Joe Harris was third on the team with like 14.
Yeah, see, that team, that's a team of just way better role players around D'Lo. Right. So, but yeah, I guess you're right. Like he was the
Like, isn't the thought there that like he could be on a playoff team as a number one option?
Yeah, if you gave him non G-leaguers.
Yeah, if you have a good rotation. So
in the East.
That's fair too. But theoretically, you make him the 2A, 2B option with Cat, and like this team could win 45% of their games fully healthy after they synergize with each other and learn how to play with each other. Right. But that also comes to coaching, just system in general, like culture, everything.
You would need to be on a team that's trying to maximize wins. And the Wolves are not trying to maximize wins given the style of play that they play.
Yeah.
That's just fact. Yeah.
How good do you think the offense is going to be like with Cat? Right now they're the worst offense in the league, which I did not expect. I expected like 20 something, maybe 20th, 24th if Cat wasn't there. 30th is just like pretty inexcusable. With Cat, do you think, I know before the season you pegged him at what, like 13th or something like that?
Yeah,
you think that's kind of still where they will be with everyone?
I actually think they've been trending in the right direction offensively for like, you know, two quarters of each of the last five games where you're like, okay, I see the outline of approaching, you know, of a group of the surrounding players being decent enough so that when Cat's plugged in, you have an average offense.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic of the impact of the Cat and D'Lo action there too. Just the two of them playing together. I think if I could know that Cat was gonna, I think if you brought back like the Cat of last season, you know, full health, fully in shape, and you plug him in with this group, you cut down your rotation to just like your nine best players. I think it still could be a 10th, 11th, 12th best offense in the league.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at with, there's just some really good offenses in the league where I don't know if they really like crack into like that top 10, and obviously like season long, they won't because they've been so bad. But if you like refresh when Cat gets back,
right. Oh, and it goes back to what we were, goes back to what we were saying with the whole, like, you know, how are D'Lo, Ant, and Malik going to take the adjustment of moving down a spot on the pecking order? You know, how they accept that and function within those roles will directly correlate to how the offense escalates. Like those are four good offensive players. If they're playing in their ideal spots and leaning into those, their ideal spots, and then Cat's leaning into his like two or three ideal spots, then yeah, like on that side of the ball, you should be straight. Like,
yeah,
really good.
Those are four guys that like will probably be 20 point per game scorers at some point in their career. Like three of them have.
They all have been except for Ant. And I think Ant
14 and he is a rookie in his 20th game or whatever.
But that's the thing, is you need them not to be 20 point scorers.
That's the problem. Yeah. No, that
you need them to be effective scorers.
There's never been a team in NBA history that's had 4 20 point per game scores. It's just that, like, legitimately has never happened before. There's been three, but not that many times either.
I think that's what the Wolves will probably try and get to end up happening. I think that probably will happen, or like,
I could see it like kind of like
Malik
the Zach Levine thing.
What's Malik at right now? 21?
20.7 or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. And D'Lo's at like 23.
No, D'Lo is at like 20, I think. Okay. He might be under 20 right now, actually. He was at 20, but he's had some bad games. D'Lo's at 19.9 right now.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I actually think playing with Kat should boost D'Lo's scoring.
I think so too.
I think it's going to impact Malik and Ant
a lot.
The most.
Yeah. I think it's going to impact
Malik and
Mike
and Malik.
Not to talk about
He doesn't score anyways.
No, but I could see a lot of backdoor cut things that we're not seeing right now.
Oh, like going up.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting like...
You're on that Jim Pete theory.
I don't think that Okogie's all of a sudden going to become a 30% shooter with Kat. I just think some things are going to open up a little bit more for him. That happens for everyone.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Malik should be able to handle an off-ball role well there. I think maybe it gets weirdest for Ant, and that comes back to rotations. It's like, all right, so who are you playing Ant with when he's not playing with Kat? You know, who are you playing Malik with when he's not in with D'Lo and Ant? You know, like this is the tricky part of coaching a team that is one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to have your set in place coping mechanisms for the defense, which create, you know, these sort of log jams and stuff like that. I don't know. It's hard. There is a balance to be struck. I think that's pretty good, but I'd be pretty surprised if we have like a 15 game stretch of this season where we're like, okay, yeah, this is like elite.
Yeah.
And they have the potential to be elite. Like, and I think that only will come with comfort and kind of growing in it. And I just don't know when Kat's going to be comfortable.
Yeah. And we don't know exactly when Kat's going to be back, but theoretically soon.
Theoretically.
But yeah, no, I think the offense will be pretty dang good once they get it figured out.
It should be. If it isn't, then blow it all up.
Yeah. Then blow it all up.
This is broke. I mean, maybe not this, but like, because the rest of this year is going to be weird, I think. And you'll get an idea of it. But if they're looking like middling offensively, if you get like, you know, 30 games with Kat and everyone involved, you're like, okay. Then you go into next season, you go, well, now we got a full year. Like if it's ready to go and you get through the first 25 games of next year and they're not elite, like top six, then what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? Like, this group has to be, when you're ready to go, this group has to be elite offensively. Otherwise it will not work.
So, okay. So we talked about Malik Beasley scoring. He's scoring, I don't remember what I looked up, 20.1 right now. When he got paid this offseason, this, you know, $60 million over four with the last year as like the team option, how did you view that contract? Like overpay, underpay, good value? What was like your initial reaction to that?
I was very concerned about it based on the fact that I thought that there was no concession made for Malik's off-court behavior, which dates back to not just the summer, but, you know, back to Denver. I said this before the year, I was concerned about like Malik, the person, and you know, and what that would be. I mean, I wanted to do good, but then if I'm, you know, was pinned with needing to make a, you know, a bet on it, like, would have I made that bet? No.
Yeah.
Given the information that I had, and that's been proven completely wrong.
Yeah. You haven't heard much about him since the season started. He seemed.
And I've heard other stuff just on background that he's been fucking great. Like,
okay. Yeah.
And I mean, lot of respect to him, you know, for that. He had things going on, yeah, like in, you know, in his life, and mostly it's stuff that, you know, people are making fun of, but, you know, I think it's really impressive what Malik Beasley has done through 21 games. And that's not just about scoring 21 points a game. It's been a commitment to this and keeping a level head. I mean, he was getting peppered with questions after last game about not getting the ball. And that's a perfectly normal time for a player to, you know, get a little itchy in their post game press conference and say something.
And yeah. And I watched that. I watched it.
It was in there.
Yeah,
you could see it.
But like, I expected it to come out, you know, just because
it would have been okay to come out. But given the fact that you've been labeled a malcontent, rightfully or wrongfully, you know, it's the right move in his position is to, you know, stay on the straight and narrow. And he, you know, and he absolutely, you know, he absolutely has. He's done that. And you know what? Like, this has been a good situation for Malik too. Like,
yeah,
if I don't know how you're Malik Beasley and you like have any ill will towards Ryan Saunders. Like, Saunders gave you the keys last year to score 23 points a game, you know, after the thing, which greatly impacted how much you got paid this offseason. And now this year, Ryan has given you full bandwidth to do your thing here again. And you're proving people like me who doubted the contract in the first place, you're proving them wrong. Like that, I mean, 90% of that's Malik, but just because one game Ryan doesn't get you enough touches, like that isn't, I think it would be wrong if Malik has any like hard feelings towards Saunders, you know?
Yeah.
Right now he's balled out in his 35 games playing under Ryan Saunders.
Yeah. And he's shooting the ball well too. It's not like he's a chucker. Like,
no,
he's like 40. What's his 2-point percentage? 53% from two, 38% from three on like 9 threes a game.
Like, right.
Or no, eight threes a game, which is just like really good. Not 50, 40, 90 club guy, but like, pretty damn good shooter there.
No, and he's doing, you know, and he's doing so as a pretty clear first or second option on the team too. Like it's that would typically drive down efficiency, you know, and it hasn't for him. And really it's like, I mean, he's had 21 games. He's probably had like four real stinker games.
Yeah, I think
this year
off the top of my head, probably just less than a handful of like really bad ones.
But if you remove those, you know, where they were like overall 3 of 15 performances, you know, if you delete those from the thing, like those percentages, now we're talking like you're almost shooting 60% from two, almost 45% from three. I mean, obviously you gotta include the whole sample, but I mean,
he had like a 2 for 8 game, a 4 for 11, a 4 for 10, a 3 for 10.
What was the Portland game?
The Portland game was 3 for 6.
From what? From two?
From three. He was 3 for 13.
Oh, I'm talking about overall.
Yeah. No, yeah, he's had a couple of those
ant stat lines.
Yeah, right. 30% from two, 25% from three. But Ant's
gotten better. For sure. He's just gotten more comfortable. I mean, he's got it.
And kind of came when he started playing next to, you know, Malik and D'Lo. Malik and Ant like seem to just like love each other. Like, just like I never would have necessarily thought Malik would be like the best mentor for Ant just because of all that off court stuff. And it seemed like he's like kind of like been really good for Ant in that sort of way.
I mean, for me, I'm seeing just the same high fives and stuff that you are. That's one of the things that I miss most about not being able to be in the locker room this year is like, you get a lot of insight into like who's close friends with who, you know. That was always interesting to monitor during the, like the Tibbs days and stuff. And it's just like funny. It's like some stuff you would never expect. You're like, oh, Josh Okogie and Jeff Teague are like boys. You're like, I wouldn't have guessed that. No. Like different things like that.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that's a separate tangent, but I miss that stuff. And it would be interesting, like, particularly with Malik, I'm like, I wonder who like Malik's best friends on the team were. Like Wancho for sure was last year.
That's probably just because they knew each, you know, they came over together.
But I think really Vanderbilt, they were really good friends.
I think Vanderbilt, well, on his like Instagram stories before the year, he had like a few people like coming.
Yeah. See, now we're left going Zapruder on Instagram. Yeah. That's what just sucks is you don't have access.
But like even Ashton Hagens was like working out at Beasley's like gym in his house, like over the summer, like in November or whatever.
No, and what Malik says all the time, and he said this since he got here, was, you know, I'm a leader of the team, you know?
Yeah.
And
right.
I remember thinking at the beginning, like right when we got here, I was like, all right, slow your roll, dude. Like you were like the 10th man in the Nuggets. But
yeah,
again, another area where he's like, prove me wrong of being so much more than he, you know, you would have guessed.
I just wonder if the Nuggets have any like, damn, we really went with Gary Harris over Malik Beasley. And like Gary Harris has been like, he had a really down year last year and it's pretty much been the same this year, except he's shooting a little bit better from two.
I think there was more personality stuff going on.
Yeah. And that's fair. That's Denver totally than, true.
I mean, like, I don't even mean that really in like a bad way. Like Malik is a guy who, I don't think he wants to be on a bad team, of course, but like he wants that big role on a team. And I think in his head, he would, you know, sacrifice playing on a contender, at least at this age, at 24 years old, to have that. And I think it just, cause he just, you know, I think he thought, and maybe he was right, that he should have been playing a ton for the Nuggets.
Well, obviously they offered him $330 and he took it down, or he turned it exactly. down because
yeah.
and that's $10 million. And he didn't get much more from the Wolves. Like, you know, it's quite a bit more, you know, another year possibly. And, you know,
yeah. Well, functionally more, he ended up turning it into like a deal he's on now is $343 with the Wolves with the option in the
yeah,
fourth
so
year.
Like so $13 million
more, but not but just $13 million more,
way bigger.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. So he'd be in the Monte Morris role, you know, or something yeah. there, like still coming off the bench and that sort of thing. So no, again, just props to him, bet on himself and has been improving himself. So that's on and off the court. That's really cool.
Okay. Defensively, this team, I don't know if you've like noticed this, obviously they haven't played like the stiffest competition for a while, but
their defensive ratings going improving.
Last 13 games, they are the number 9 defense in the league. And that's a 13 game sample size, which is over half. Now, I don't think that's going to ever stick.
What's the gap between the 9th team and the 15th team over that time? Do you have that in front of you?
Yeah. It's like 1 point per 100 possessions or something like that. Oh. Yeah. 1.1.
I would say, no, I mean, I,
but between, but I, between I 20th, between 20th, it's like 4 points.
Yeah. Oh, that's,
And they played like Cleveland and San Antonio twice. Without missing yeah. some guys. And so, but it's still been the last 13 games, which includes when Cat was back.
It sure hasn't been the worst defense in the league.
Oh no, no.
And I think in the Golden State games, they played, I thought they played really good defense in the first half of ended up losing them both big time, but that's what they've done is that their defense has had longer extended stretches of being solid and then it just totally falls apart at times, whereas the prior was just falls apart all the time before. So
yeah,
I would say yeah, like you're seeing instances of them figuring it out and getting comfortable. A big part of that I think is reps, because they haven't been able to practice it. Like they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know how they were like matching up in transition defense. I mean that the egregious errors defensively have gone away. I would say 9th is misrepresentative of how good it's been.
Oh yeah.
But I would say like eye test, it's like 15th, 16th, something like that. Like kind of been an average defense.
Okay. So what if they get to that point where they're like 20th, like they stick around like 20th? Cause right now they're like 23rd in the league over like the whole season, something like that. 23rd, 24th. What if they are like the 22nd defense in the league? And then the offense with Cat is like, 12th, like how good a team is that?
Well, that's what I thought. Before the season, my guess was they'd be 13th offensively and 22nd defensively. So yeah. I think, yeah, like,
is that a 500 team? Is that a 400 team?
Like, if you look at like the teams that are like that now in the league, it's kind of like they'd be like 8-12.
Okay.
Like the Pelicans are kind of like that, something like that. So no, it's not enough. They need to get up to average defensively. And I don't think they can do that.
With
this roster, even if they're playing like this, and even if they had cap back, like for the second half of the season, I don't know. It'd be a pleasant surprise, but I wouldn't, I wouldn't bet on it. But honestly, the bar right now is just don't be a bottom five defense. And they're moving in that direction.
Yeah. And that 13 game sample size goes back to the game they lost in OT to the Spurs, Cat's first game back with the wrist injury. So it's been since then that they're number nine.
So since Cat went out, so it's happening again where the defense is better.
But he played in two of those games. So that game counted. Okay. And then the Grizzlies game counts as well. So that's two of them or whatever.
I was going to say, it'd be more bad optics for Cat if again, for
right after
sixth
he goes
year in a row. Well, yeah, because that's what happened last year, was the defense was way better with him off the floor than when he was on the floor. I don't think that'll happen this year because he's in four games looked good, but
so the Wolves have played, like you said, stretches where they've looked good defensively and they kind of like shit the bed, like in the fourth quarter. With Cap back, theoretically the offense would be better if the defense plays around that sometimes. It's not going to be every game. They play like that sometimes. Maybe that's Cat's like 20, 30, 40 point lead that now you can't blow in the fourth quarter. So maybe that leads to like more successes, just like having a bigger lead at any point in the game.
Yeah.
And also you're not going sick Cat on the floor. You're probably not going 6 minutes without getting a bucket. Like,
oh, you're definitely not. They would have, the fourth quarter offense would have been so different.
Yeah.
In that San Antonio game, if they had him.
But I think it's encouraging to see like over a pretty good sample size, even if the teams are bad, the Wolves have been able to play some solid defense, and not be like bottom. I don't think they're ever going to be a 10th ranked defense with this team, but if they are, like we expected before the year, like 20, like you said, 22nd.
Yeah. Like, it's an encouraging sign.
Yeah, for sure. And it just, if that would happen all season long and they were, like 8 games under 500 at the end of the year or 10 games or whatever, you'd be a lot happier with that. But now they're in an 11 game hole already. They're not going to sniff 500 again, even close to this season.
It'll be interesting to just to take in what the once Cat return sample size is. What are those, 20 games from now or 20 games from when Cat returns, what are those numbers? Those are the ones that matter. I mean, we're obviously, wringing our hands over what's happened over these 21 games. And that's just the nature of doing this job. But so much of this is irrelevant because players are playing in positions and spots that they're not built to, because this team is built to play around Cat and that affects everyone else. So, I don't know. It's not that you totally throw it out, but in a lot of ways, when we're envisioning the future, a lot of what these guys are doing now, you got to take with a pretty big grain of salt and say, okay, you're doing this well now, but can you do this next to Cat? Can you do this in that context? That'll be a big difference. It'll be much more meaningful.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of how I try to think of things. Is like, once Cat's back, you kind of just disregard what's happened this season so far until you see like what happens with the whole team. And it's hard too, because you question a lot of people question Saunders for not adjusting without Cat, but it's like, when you look at one of the most inexperienced teams in the league, how much do you want to try and implement a new system for when Cat's not here? That's not going to matter when Cat's here, when those guys are still trying to learn how to play at the NBA level. That's just like where I've always struggled with it. And that doesn't, excuse like rotation mistakes that have happened and things like that. But it's definitely something that I think needs to be thought of.
That's just part of the context.
Yeah. I want to ask you this because I forgot to ask this when we talked about the rotation. Naz Reid back up to Cat. Like, that's pretty clear and obvious. Say Cat plays 32 minutes a night. Is 16 enough for Naz, or is it where do you think Ryan ever tries to run, Naz next to Cat? Now that Naz has, kind of thinned out, become more of a better defender and even a better offensive player. And then you look at, like, say it's McDaniels and Vanderbilt at the four. Are those guys you want to play each over an average, like 20, you want to play 48 minutes of those two, or do you want to play 40 minutes of those two and get Nas?
They're going to play, they'll play Nas a little bit next to Cat against bigger teams, or they, I've heard they want to get to that.
Yeah.
But it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, the log jam, and it's a gross log jam, but the log jam is kind of at the power forward position where it's, you want to play McDaniels, you want to play Vanderbilt, they want to play Wancho. So now if you start moving Nas into any of those minutes, even if it's just eight a game, you know, you got to, you've watered that down even more. Yeah. So I don't know. I think the interesting thing would be if they were playing, you know, the Lakers in one of Kat's first games back, would, you know, do you decide to go when you need to go to bigs? Do you decide to go Cat and Nas, or do you decide to go Cat and Vanderbilt? Because you will need to do that for extended chunks of that game. And
they do play the Lakers pretty soon. February 16th.
There you go. Maybe that would be, maybe that would be it.
That's pretty close.
I think they'd be, I think most people would think, given what's happened, that it would be Vanderbilt, but I don't know. I think it could be Nas who gets those, who gets some, you know, maybe it's not the start, but plays a good chunk of minutes next to Kat so as to have a bigger front court for that game.
Yeah. It's just been kind of hard because Nas has kind of proven that he's like probably like the fifth best player on this team right now, you know, with Kat. Like, and if he's only playing solely behind Kat for 16 minutes a night, like, I feel like he's earned a bigger role than that, but also it's where you fit him into the team in general with that. Yep. And it's sad that Nas is your fifth best player, I guess, but it's kind of where we're at. So
it is, it is, but no, I think it'll be, it's like any of these, when you start playing these guys at different positions, you got to teach them that first too.
That's so true.
I mean, I've asked Nas about it. He says, well, I would need to learn the four position. So
it's kind of weird to think
I'm
that
learning it. Yeah.
It's kind of weird to think like Josh would be a power forward in this team. And then Nas Reed is like a power forward on the same team at times. He's obviously, that's not his position, but could,
that's because the Timberwolves are weird.
They're weird. That is an understatement, I think. Yeah. But no, I think that's all I got for you. So thanks for doing this. It was cool to kind of hash this out and see where we're at. But
keep grinding away, man. Keep grinding away. Stay on.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Stay on the Wolves grind.
I got the weirdest like urges over the past few weeks to just like write about the Timberwolves when they're just like not good. Like 10 pieces in like 2 weeks. And I'm just like,
that's what it's
all
about. You've
obviously been doing the same thing too with like the podcasts and everything after every game. And then most days in between, which I mean, kudos to you, but I think that's the tough thing is like, people think that, you know, like that you're pained into like doing it, like that you just like hate doing it. But I don't know.
I don't have to teach preschool,
I'm not gonna have to teach preschool much, but
no. I mean that like it's like,
yeah, no,
it's my job, so it's I certainly don't mind doing it. I would. The worst ones are where it's the whole second half is a waste because they're already down by 20, because then you just can't talk about basketball really.
Like, yeah,
because it wasn't really a game.
And the games in Portland, and they get done at midnight, and then you got to sit through all the Zoom calls sucks. And everything.
Yeah.
All right.
Those are late nights.
Those are done now, though, until the second half of the schedule, I think.
Well, apparently now with the Lakers. When's the Lakers game? Oh, the Lakers.
It's a home game.
Good.
I think it's a home game. Yeah.
Yeah. I hate the West Coast games.
Yeah. The latest one now is 7:30 on Monday is the Mavericks game. So.
Perfect.
All right. Well, thanks, Dane. I appreciate it. So, again, that was Dane Moore at Dane Moore NBA on Twitter, right?
Yes.
All right. And everybody listening to this probably already follows you anyways, but on the off chance they don't, go check out Dane's podcast as well. Just search up Dane Moore NBA podcast. Best Wolves spot around outside of this one. So just got to put
second
that out
place.
There.
Second place. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Dane. Anyways, thank you guys for listening. I'm Brendan. Follow me on Twitter, BHeadKeyNBA. Thanks for listening. I'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.